want to borrow my crossbow?
I thought about it.
Well, I got a new crossbow.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
What was wrong with the other one?
I didn't have a crossbow. Oh, no, I got a real, like...
Oh, gotcha. Like an actual one.
Like, yeah, if I need to kill your neighbor or something. Like, we could have a duel.
If my neighbor is Tyrion's father, like that sort of thing.
You never loved me. You always wanted me dead.
All right. I'm just going to leave that in there.
That I cannot forgive.
Just totally leaving that in there. Dunk. It is Way of the Warrior, episode 293. We are going to break down UFC Fight Night 75. John Jones doesn't get jail, and UFC 192 is this weekend, and all of that is next. It's Way of the Warrior.
Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll him out, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, as we've got a lot of stuff to break down, and we will start with Sir John Jones.
Just a heads up, we're late on a Friday, so I've been at the bar.
Okay, perfect.
So just so you're aware, I mean, this is perfect to talk about John Jones stuff.
This is. Because
we can get in his mindset. I mean, I'm going to wait until the show's done, and I'm going to sober up before I drive home. But, I mean, I'm where John Jones is when he runs and grabs his drugs and money and runs away from a car.
Yes. So let's, to reset, John Jones was arrested in New Mexico for a hit and run of a pregnant woman.
Mm-hmm.
And during that...
Broke her arm.
Mm-hmm. During that altercation, he ran back to his car to collect cash and drugs of some...
Like, possibly. Allegedly. We don't know what we gathered.
There's a pipe with marijuana residue in it that was in the car. Mm. And here we are. He went in front of an appellate judge on Tuesday.
Yeah, there was a hearing of some sort.
He got 18 months of probation.
And community service. Don't forget that.
Community service. He's got to speak 72 times.
Yeah, he's going to go to schools, tell kids not to touch power lines, stuff like that. So I'm not sure...
He's going to dress as Woodsy the Owl.
Right, exactly.
And tell people that only you can prevent forest fires.
Don't forget, look up for power lines.
Give a hoot, don't pollute. John Jones.
I really think the power lines thing is a more pressing issue, but I mean, I think we all know about pollution and recycling.
He's been hired by Consumers Energy to tell you about power lines.
Don't touch a down power line.
I'm John Jones for power lines.
So this is interesting, too, because this all happens. Could the timing have been worse for UFC?
Or better? Like, this is like...
Is it worse or is it better? Because, I mean, there's two things going on here. I have to ask. I've already got commitments. So I had no plan. No. I've already got commitments. You know I already have commitments.
I've already got commitments.
So I had never planned on being able to watch this, although I think I wanted to watch it.
Sure.
Are you planning on watching this?
Absolutely.
Are you watching this just to see who John Jones is going to get to fight next?
Absolutely.
This might as well be UFC 192 Irrelevant Championship because it's a number one contenders match all of a sudden, even though one of the dudes has a belt.
So there's that.
That's more interesting, possibly.
That's why I think the timing couldn't be better. I will tell you that I wanted to watch this anyway because just I think the card is amazing with Rashad and Bader and Hendricks and Woodley. I think it's it's the start of all of the insane cards that we have through the end of the year. That said, once this news is announced, I think that there's a lot of interest in this because it puts an entire division on alert and leads us into. What the Kangaroo Court is going to do with Sir John Jones. And I've been quoting you most of the week and saying that, I think Ken's right. It's going to be a fine and time served and you're back in the octagon.
Well, no, I don't even think that. I don't think that they don't have jurisdiction here. I mean, unless they want to make licensing an issue for him.
So they can't even hold the, like...
I mean, this is Nevada, so I mean, they can do whatever the hell they want because let them do whatever the hell they want. But let's take it from here first. He was not convicted of a crime. He pled guilty to a crime. So there's that. There's that type of thing. But there's a lot of guilty dudes that get to fight in Las Vegas. So if the history holds true, they really don't have anything to say here. They basically rubber stamp his license. Now, what I've been saying is if somebody there wants to take some type of stand or give some type of basically feign the fact that there's some type of worry here and we need to set an example, then maybe they'll give him a fine of some sort before he can license. But I would really be interested to see what type of precedent they're going to set here, or if they're able to take any type of action in this matter, because it's one of those issues where I don't know if they've got any real jurisdiction here, because the guy's basically done his time. He's going to be on probation.
So
he's
literally
going to do community service.
So literally nothing happens to
him. I'm thinking zero happens to him. He's going to go to license. The UFC is the one that suspended him. It wasn't a licensing issue.
No. I know that, but they showed up at his hearing to support him.
Oh,
so it's
I know.
Not like they're
I'm
not,
just resetting it.
Yeah, yeah. They're not going to do anything at this point because they're all in the John Jones business. So essentially, like this, where this leaves us in my mind is what Luke Thomas wrote about this week, where on probation you get to know the true John Jones. Like, is he smart enough to get out of his way for 18 months, or will the train derail itself before we get to see DC and John Jones too?
Well, you know, I've had people who've had issues before, and they always talk about probation being that time that's the real test. Like, you know, for some dudes, they say probation might as well be life, because some dudes just keep screwing up.
Sure.
And we're going to find out with John Jones if he's one of those dudes. Does 18 months turn into life with him when he's on probation? Because he's had a couple screw-ups here and there. And is he smart enough to get it out of his own way? I think he is. I think there's enough people around him probably making enough money to keep him from getting in his own way. You're never 100% sure.
Wouldn't that have been the case prior to all of this?
It should have been, but I mean, the world is full of sycophants, and these bubbles that get created around celebrities. I think I was reading some very interesting stuff from Ronda Rousey's mom last week, where she talks about the celebrity bubbles, and she talks about the fact that, you know, people act like a-holes because nobody's there to tell them no, because nobody wants to tell them no because of the money they're making. Well, they're not going to make that money, and they're not going to get to be John Jones' friend if he's in jail, because they're not going to jail with John Jones.
Right.
So
right.
Maybe somebody in this little sycophantic celebrity circle is finally going to say, no, that's not the best idea. Don't do this. Hey, dude, we're going to install Uber onto your phone. It's the U on the front page. Please. It's actually, you know what? We're putting 12. 12 on page one. There's 12 U's. We don't care what we don't care if you're getting on Twitter. We don't care if you're trying to Facebook. We don't care if you're trying to check into Untappd, which, by the way, is a bad idea at this point. You're going to get an Uber to drive you somewhere. And I think there's enough of those people around John Jones, which is shown by the fact that UFC was there to support him at the hearing, that I think he'll be fine for the 18 months if that's what we're going to talk about. Community service, UFC is going to probably take care of that. They'll
sure.
schedule it. They'll make sure it's
yeah,
done.
Right, yeah.
So I don't see any issues there. The most interesting issue is we are now going to come upon what we've been talking about for weeks on the show, is finding out whether or not this time off has hurt John Jones. Now, obviously, this went as good as it could go.
Yep.
For John Jones at this point, considering what he did. But you've also got a John Jones that, what are we rumored? They want to maybe do Super Bowl weekend with him now?
When it first came out, everyone thought, well, immediately we're doing 200, right? Like that, and that's not where we are, but like that was the immediate, because they didn't know what was going to happen, and they thought 200.
I don't know where 200 is.
It's July.
July.
So that we won't,
oh,
it won't be
July. I feel
July.
Like you're waiting too long then.
Right. So Super Bowl seems like a logical conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, you've got to give whoever wins is going to be the number one contender with a fake belt. DC
it
and
is
Gus.
It is a real belt. They just don't, they're not going to hold it once this is
so
over.
The number one contender with the fake belt.
Yes.
Gets to fight John Jones whenever, and they get to fight a John Jones that hasn't fought since January. We may be looking at a 13-month layoff. I'm not going to understate this fact. That is going to affect John Jones. Now, here's the thing. John Jones might be at a 15 on a 1 through 10 scale, where a guy like DC or a guy like Gus, they're 9 or 10, and John was 15. So John may only get knocked down to 14 or 13, and this might sound like I'm hedging my bets. He might be that good where it doesn't matter as far as the competition he's got in front of him, but it's going to be something to watch. It's going to be interesting if DC wins on Saturday to see a guy who's going to be pretty confident at this point. He's going to have two big wins behind him. Not that he didn't have wins before. I think he was undefeated in the John Jones fight, right?
He was undefeated.
Not that he didn't have big wins before, but these are going to be big UFC title defenses, whether or not we talk about the Walmart belt that he's wearing. So this becomes 100 times more interesting than it would have been just, what are we at, 10 months ago at this point? 10 months ago.
Yes, yeah.
So it's definitely going to be interesting. I feel like we've got a pay-per-view now where we're crowning a number one contender, which we haven't done a whole lot of. I'd have to look back and dig through to actually see if that were the case. Obviously, it's not intentionally the case here, and we've got some other big fights on the card. But, man, this whole John Jones thing, you think it helps the card?
I certainly, well, to the casual fan, it absolutely helps the card because now you know if you're going to get Daniel Cormier, Jon Jones, mm-hmm. too. It's mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, save for unless something crazy happens that we alluded to a couple minutes ago, it's
you don't think so? Not that we'll break this down in just a second. You don't think Gus has a chance here?
No,
not against DC.
Not at all.
I saw some interesting comments over the week too, where a lot of people think DC might be the best heavyweight in the UFC, but he's just not the best light heavyweight when Jon Jones comes back. I think you could make some arguments on that other end.
You mean the best light heavyweight?
He's not the best light heavyweight.
He's the best heavyweight.
He might be the best heavyweight.
Gotcha.
Some people would put him right up there with JDS Kane and Verdum, obviously.
Sure.
I don't know if he's going to beat those dudes, but I certainly would wonder if you were to put him in the cage with those guys, and we'll get to see this settled in just a couple months, how he would do against them versus Jon Jones, and I don't necessarily disagree. He might do better against some of those dudes than he did against Jon Jones.
Well, if you play the MMA math game that we've played on the show for 6 years, so
which is 100% infallible.
Totally infallible and absolutely something you should go to FanDuel right now or DraftKings and bet, had your
for
bets.
For as little as a dollar.
Yes, that you can apparently get back or whatever, however that works. However, if you look at what Rumble Johnson did just 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. The guy can destroy people with his fists.
Mm-hmm.
And DC survived that and ended the fight,
yeah.
Right? So this is a guy who can clearly take a punch. And Gus gets knocked out by Rumble, right?
Yes.
And so to me, MMA math says, well, I think DC's got a better chin. I think DC's wrestling is better. And I don't think in this day and age in 2015, while I think it is an advantage, to me, the length of Gustafson is not big enough advantage to keep DC from closing the distance.
I think what we're going to see here in this fight is what we all kind of predicted would be the winning strategy in the Jon Jones fight. He wasn't able to implement it the way he wanted to. That's the quick get inside, fight in a phone booth, take the guy down, and just keep grinding through the fight. That's what everybody said DC would have to do in the first fight. And he was able to do some of that. Remember, he took John 5 rounds to the decision.
Yep.
He just obviously lost that fight. In this fight, I think he's seeing a guy where we matched up Gus and Jon Jones before. And like, oh, Gus can do what Jon can do. Jon doesn't have the reach. He can't throw the elbows against Gus. We're hearing all of those things. And again, some of us still think Gus won that fight against Jon Jones. I don't think a lot of people, though, think he's as good as some of those things as Jon Jones is as good as some of those things. So what you see here is DC is probably going to grind this out and do exactly what we thought he could do to win the Jon Jones fight. And probably win this one handily is what I'm thinking. Fight's fight. You never know, but that's where I'm going to land on this one, too.
And I think coming off the loss to Rumble, obviously Gustafson is the contender because of where we are, because DC beat Rumble. They're not going to do Rumble, too.
Very interesting, right. Yeah. Because DC, I mean, hell, man, if you're DC, what a shot you've got here. You're coming off a loss that in almost every other division would knock you down 4 or 5 guys. Easily knock you down 4 or 5 guys. And he's fighting for the championship this weekend. I know I made fun of it 5 minutes ago, but for effect, we'll talk about the championship. He's fighting for it this weekend. That's pretty much unheard of at this point in the UFC at this level.
And I think Gustafson gets involved in this only because Jones is out, right? Because you're right.
Oh, yeah.
If that loss happens and Jones is in the picture, yeah, he's down 4 or 5 pegs.
And we talked about that, you know, before. We talked about how Jon Jones taking a break makes this division more interesting because we were falling
sure
into
does.
A little bit of that Anderson Silva territory where it was interesting to watch him beat up on guys, but not everybody was necessarily watching him beat up on guys. I thought we were getting to the point where we might, a little Silva Maya area, which got a little disinteresting for a while. So him taking the break, you know, it's one of those things where the division has kind of been shaken up just enough to where his matchups against any of these dudes is going to see him fresh. And obviously Rumble Johnson is still lying out there in wait. And man, after that win, I wouldn't pick Johnson. I'm not going to lay my money on it yet, but I'd love to see him fight again before. And then obviously see what Jon Jones has and maybe see that fight happen in the future. I'm not trying to count out DC because I really think once we get closer to that fight, we can get a lot more honed in on the predictions. I think we've got a couple really interesting possibilities we wouldn't have thought were as interesting just a couple of months ago.
And in the co-main event slot, at least in the sheet that I have, which I think is weird since Hendricks and Woodley is, again, another number one contender match, but you've got the typical UFC thing that I know you and I like to see them do, which booking another high-level 205ers just in case something goes wrong. You've got Rashad Evans against Ryan Bader. Interesting that Rashad has been talking all week on how he wants to go out on his own terms, and that's reflective in the fact that he hasn't been in the octagon since 2013 at UFC 167 when he beat Chael Sonnen. And Ryan Bader is on a four.
God, I forgot about that fight.
Is on a four-fight win streak. So this is going to be a really interesting fight. And while I'm not going to make the total connection between Rashad Evans' layoff and John Jones' layoff, because I think they're two totally different things, because I don't think Rashad starts at 15, goes down to 12. Mm-hmm. I think Rashad starts at 9 and is probably at 6 or 5.
Do you think? Well, yeah, but let's remember his layoff was of choice, too, and he got to go. And not that John didn't get to go to the gym, but certainly things were up in the air. Stress can affect things. Rashad did his break. He didn't have an injury, did he?
I think he started with an injury and then was just, you know,
just kind of
wanted to do his own thing, which, again, I totally admire that, going out on your terms and doing what you want to do. I just think, much like you've been saying, had John Jones gone to jail for 2 years, he would have come back to a very different UFC. I think 2013 UFC and 2015 UFC are a very different animal. And Ryan Bader is obviously a very different competitor, because in 13, I think everybody would say Rashad hands down. And I don't know.
Except for Sean Desai.
Yes, except for Sean
Desai hates Rashad Evans.
Yeah, that's very true. And I'm not looking at the line, so I don't know. But my guess is that Bader's the favorite. And I don't know that I would disagree with Bader being the favorite if that's in fact true, because I think Bader being on a tear, this is a really, really killer matchup and should be a very fun fight to watch.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with Bader being the favorite, but I mean, Rashad Evans, he's one of those old school guys, and we talk about this a lot, the guys that we kind of like, and we, you know, they go out there and they're warriors, and we talked about this a little bit with Josh Barnett, and we'll talk about that fight night lineup coming up in just a couple of minutes. Yeah, Rashad's that dude, man. He's really only been beaten by the champs, and Ryan Bader's not a champ. So how do you make Ryan Bader the favorite at this point? I don't know.
Well, I here's,
is it the layoff?
Here's what I would say. I would say part layoff and part he's on a four-fight win streak, and part he was in the conversation to fight DC and trying to talk his way into that fight, which not that he would have beaten DC. I don't think that at all. But he has made it interesting enough for me that I feel like I would lean towards Bader, even if you're about to tell me that the line doesn't say that, isn't reflected.
No, Rashad Evans is your favorite.
Is it?
Minus 160. It's close. Plus 140 for Ryan. So it's close, but yeah, you know, Ultimate Fighter for life, bro. Like, not any of these recent ones. Like, the first three.
Right, the only ones that
like
count.
The first, like, three or four. They stopped Ultimate Fighter after four seasons, did one women's season, and then that was it. That was all that ever happened.
I think Conor McGregor's going to disagree with you on
that's
that
all that. No, you think Conor McGregor would disagree. I don't think he would. Does he even know the Ultimate Fighter is going on right now? Dude comes in, reads his phone. Like, dude reads his phone. If you haven't watched the Ultimate Fighter, by the way, I got a chance to, like, catch up on one the other day. And I did it purely just so Eric would go insane when I started talking about it. Have you watched? You've watched these, right?
Yeah, of course. Because
like you're a masochist.
No. Because the only reason I'm watching is because I like Ryan Hall a lot.
Okay. Will you summarize for me if this last episode was like every other episode where Connor shows up in between photo shoots. He reads something off his phone. I don't know if somebody emails it to him. Probably Dana. Because he's not good at delivering it either. Like, I get it. You know, we don't all talk for a living, and we don't talk very well for a living, be God straight with you. But
which is why they don't pay us for this part.
Exactly, so. Which really we need to work on. But I get it if, like, okay, I want to put my words down and then deliver them. Usually somebody's got some emotion. Like, Conor McGregor's there, and you as fighters should always go to the mat for each other, because we are fighters, and we fight. I've got to go to a photo shoot, so thank you, and I will be back. Congratulations on your graduation. Like, what? First off, you sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is really weird for an Irishman.
I was going to say, the fact that you started as William Wallace and became Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But that's what Connor does, so I don't know. That may be a bad Irishman impression, but it's a dead-on Conor McGregor impression. So I don't think he knows those are going on, but I think he remembers Rashad Evans from The Ultimate Fighter, and Rashad's a 160 favorite right now, Ryan Bader plus 140.
I'm still telling you Ryan Bader wins that fight. I'm telling you that right now. Take it to the FanDuel, son.
Look, and I, or the DraftKings. I'm picking Rashad, and you know there's no relation.
There's a third one. But
there's no relation in that instance. I just want to say I'm picking Rashad.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens. I would love for Rashad to win because I know like somewhere in San Diego, like Sean DeZay's head is just exploding.
Like
scanners. It's just boom.
All of a sudden, this became probably the most pop culture centric version of the show ever that we're just going to interject.
We're always going to do them late on Fridays.
We're always going to do them.
Let's drag Ken out of the bar and see what the show sounds like.
For sure. Johnny Hendricks and Tyrone Woodley, that is your number one contender match essentially happening at the 170. And this is one of those fights that for me is very hard to pick. And this is why, because I think Hendricks losing, that can do stuff to your head that can either really make your performance amazing or make it terrible. And Woodley is one of those guys that is very hit or miss for me.
Like, but when he's hit,
he's on fire. And when he's missed, he's not so much.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be a really, really great test. I don't know, though. I don't know if I had to pick right now. I think I would have to still think that Hendricks is going to be.
Hendricks is a big favorite if you want to go to.
He should be a big favorite.
They
for
don't
sure.
build those big gold buildings in Vegas because they're stupid.
Correct.
So he's -330, which is a big favorite over Tyrone Woodley, who's +270 at this point. So I don't think that's a bad bet necessarily. I don't think it's an even money bet I would ever make. I just think Johnny Hendricks just has too much experience. I mean, again, I'm going to go back to that fight. We talked about it earlier. Did Gus win over Jones? People argue about that. There's a fight where Johnny Hendricks beat George St. Pierre and got screwed. And I will still maintain that at this point. And that dude knows what to do in big fights. He's going to know what to do in this fight. And I don't think this one's going to be a contest. I really don't. And I know you like Tyrone Woodley. Well, and he's an impressive fighter. But let's go back to the analogy. This is another 10 to 15 dude. Tyrone might be close to a 10, but I think Johnny's a dude that can grind out at 15 all day.
No doubt, because, I mean, if you look, you know, if you get into the nitty-gritty and look at where Woodley loses, he loses to Rory, he loses to Jake Shields, he loses to Marquardt, he does a split decision with Kelvin Gastelum, if that tells you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where you put Kelvin Gastelum.
I like the dude, but yeah, he's not Johnny Hendricks,
right? I guess I just think when you see a guy like Woodley KO Kim, split decision Gastelum, and kind of build that momentum back up after losing the number one contender thing to Rory, I think that makes him a little bit more dangerous than it normally would. But his resume is reflective of the fact that this is going to be a really, really tough one for him to navigate through, especially if Hendricks is even close to 100%.
And I know we bemoan the fact sometimes with heavyweight, if we're talking about championships, it's like the top two or three guys, and you really don't want to see them all fight seven times. But I'll tell you what, you take Robbie Lawler, you take Johnny Hendricks, you take Rory McDonald, you put them in fights against each other for the next 10 years, I'm going to watch every single fight. I think Tyrone Woodley is just underneath that at this point. Maybe this will be a wake-up call for that division. Maybe he breaks through. I would love nothing more. Because Tyrone Woodley would inject some fresh blood there, but I can't complain about a fight between any of those other top four contenders at this point.
And I don't want you to misunderstand. I'm not complaining.
And Carlos Condit's sitting there on the outside of that, too.
Yes. You know,
and that's another dude, I think. He comes back in, and he would actually knock Tyrone Woodley down one if you wanted to talk about that at this point. I mean, I know he's got the win earlier, and he got knocked out that way, but man.
Well, with a knee injury, though, so I don't know. I mean, like, a fight is a fight, and a win is a win.
A fight.
But I don't know that that's indicative of Woodley besting Condit, all things being equal.
Yeah, and again, it's always about the last few fights, and where does that leave you mentally, and that's what's going to be very interesting to see here. Woodley breaking through would not break my heart. I mean, Hendricks had some shots. I still think he was an uncrowned champ there for a while.
Sure.
After the GSP fight, obviously he got to hold the belt for a little while. It's going to be a really cool fight. Like I said, and I don't want people to misunderstand what I said earlier. I literally had other plans. This is a card I usually line up for.
Yeah, well, and you know, I would say here we are, what, 2 years with GSP gone, 2-3 years at this point?
And the division's in good shape. We were wondering where it would be.
Well, and what I was more meaning is, like, if I'm Johnny Hendricks, I know that I sent that dude to the retirement home, and he never came back. So even if I didn't get the belt,
even though people ask him every 3 days if he's coming back.
Yes, but they've done that for 36 months and he's not coming back. You know, so if you're Hendricks, you've got to have that in the back of your mind that you were the guy that did that. It wasn't Robbie Lawler that did that. That's not to say that Robbie Lawler didn't best you and owns the belt right now, because he certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you. Either one of these guys I'm excited for, and I would not be broken up to see a different fight if Woodley is the guy that makes it past.
So you didn't think the Leaper's coming back like at the end of the fight to challenge somebody?
No, he's not.
Baltrock? Batrock?
Batrock, I think.
Batrock?
Yeah.
You're the comic guy.
Yes, clearly. Juliana Pena taking Jessica Eye. This is an interesting fight.
See, I love this fight because I recognize both of those names. Well, they're women fighters.
And I think is interesting is Pena is 2-0 in the UFC, and Jessica Eye came in 10-1, and people were super fired up that she's in the UFC, she's going to do all of this stuff, and she's 1-2-1 in the UFC.
Shut up, I still know her name.
Yes, well, but that, I think, again, that goes back to speaking what we talked about every time we talk about Ronda Rousey, which is the depth or lack thereof of this division. And, you know, somebody like Pena and I, while this is an interesting fight, I mean, I think Pena is your winner, mm-hmm. and I think Jessica Eye might be worried about being cut at this point, being 1-2, or in this case, if she loses, 1-3-1.
I don't know if she's going to get cut. People sort of know her name, and she's a woman fighter.
And you've won one out of five fights? Okay.
I remember her. She fought in those six fights I know about. That's what we're judging with UFC at this point.
The kickoff on Fox Sports 1, Joseph Benavidez on his three-fight win streak welcomes back Ali Bagatinov.
This is interesting. It's for the not Mighty Mouse Championship of the World.
The not Mighty Mouse Championship of the World. And mostly for Ali Bagatinov, it's can you test clean after this fight?
Oh, that's right. He burnt up the Dixie Cups, didn't he?
Yes, he certainly did. He's back from his suspension, and he gets Benavidez, who's on a three-fight win streak. So that'll be a barn burner to launch us into the main card. And the only other thing I wanted to mention, because I found this to be really fascinating, is I was watching... They've got a documentary on Fight Pass with Dana White and Nick the Tooth and Matt Serra, where they travel around the country and they look for amateur fighters to or pro fighters to bring into the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first episode, they run into this kid named Sage Northcutt, who looked like a Hollywood model for Abercrombie & Fitch. He's super tan and frosted tips and very California-y.
Mm-hmm.
And he destroyed his opponent. And immediately after, they signed him to the UFC, and he is fighting this weekend. The youngest fighter currently competing in the UFC at 19. The youngest fighter, I forget the name, but the youngest fighter ever in the UFC was 18 years old. But Sage turned 19 in March, and he will be fighting a guy named Francisco Trevino. And neither of those guys have Wikipedia pages, which will tell you that you're getting in on the ground floor if you check this fight out, and he does what he did in that episode on Fight Pass.
See, I want to tell you, you've got a very astute eye. And you've got a thing for this, because I was on the UFC page, and there is what we would call in the business, I don't know what you guys call it in your business, but we call it dynamic leads.
Yes.
Sage Northcutt.
Oh, interesting.
Has a dynamic lead on
That's
the UFC page. Did you cheat and check
that
out?
I did not cheat and check that
out.
Because
I just saw that name before we went on the air. I'm like, who is that dude?
Well, I was...
And Eric comes in with the Sage Northcutt segment.
Well, so I did see him on MMA Fighting this week. He was part of the open workouts, which I thought was interesting. So they clearly see something in him that they brought him on, and he's fighting 4 weeks after they've put him on the show, which I just thought it was an interesting story. And there aren't very many reasons in my mind, and I know that we've talked about this, there aren't very many reasons to start your night on Fight Pass to watch those one or two fights that end up on Fight Pass.
One of those reasons, if maybe you canceled 2 months ago.
One of those might be that. The other might be the fact that, you know, you just don't want to start your day watching these fights that you don't know. But I'm telling you, one of two things are going to happen. If he wins this one quickly, having a dynamic lead on the homepage, you know they're going to work it into the pay-per-view if they can find time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you might get to see it anyway. However, if you're somebody who kind of has an astute eye for that thing and wants to see something from the ground up, this might be a unique opportunity. They're calling him the male version of Paige VanZant with the stardom that they feel is around him. So again, if you're somebody who wants to see this
stuff... So if you want to feel as smart as Eric, is what Eric's saying.
That is not
nice, humble brag. Yes. Nice.
Yes, okay.
Well done,
that
sir.
That is what I'm trying to do. If you would like to be as cool as I am, you will start your day on Fight Pass. This message brought to you by Fight Pass, which you can order right now. I'm just kidding. I just thought it was an interesting story.
And the Holmgren podcast.
You know, I just...
All available on Podbean and iTunes. Please rate them today. Is that where we are?
If we weren't friends, I would
hate you.
I would hate you.
It's okay, anyways.
Actually still Thursday, the amount of times that you've said Friday.
Oh,
so,
did I keep saying Friday?
Yes.
See? This is why this is awesome to do this later in the day.
I'm glad you enjoy the show. When we get back, we'll break down the rest of the stuff, talk about UFC Fight Night 75.
Which happened a week ago, because it's Saturday now.
Yeah. As Ken alluded to, jump on iTunes and give us a rating of some sort.
Please.
One to five.
We're pretty sure we know where it's going to land at this point.
We'll be back. It's Way of the Warrior. It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Holcrin, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Last weekend, it was UFC Fight Night 75. Josh Barnett taking on Roy Nelson. You also had Gegard Mousasi and Uriah Hall, which to me is clearly the story of the night, because
that's like when Sarah Connor beat the Terminator.
It very much is. I mean, because if you
got to land, when you land the right blow, you can stop the dude.
Yes, and so. If you didn't catch this fight, essentially what happened in the first round was what we thought was going to happen, was Gegard Mousasi doing whatever he would like to do, however he would
so
like to
methodic.
Do it.
He's an interesting dude, because I remember watching this round of this fight, and it was late, so you know,
sure.
I'm already probably half out of it at that point, like I was today earlier in the show.
Yes.
And he's just doing his methodical thing, and I'm like, oh, God. And it was really weird, because it's super impressive. I'm not going to take any of that away from him, but... Man, you watch dude, and you're like, okay, here we go. And he did that for that first round. And then I don't know if it was the corner, I don't know if it was great timing, or just the placement of that kick, because I think Gegard had that scouted high.
Yes.
So he was trying to duck under, and he ends up... Well, that kick would have hurt even if Gegard didn't try to duck into it.
Right.
Like, that would have squared him...
Yes.
That would have probably squared him up in the chest.
Yep.
Real good, and probably still ended the fight, because that's how well Uriah delivered that kick. I don't know if it was corner. I don't know if it was lucky timing. I don't know what it was. But Uriah Hall found that kryptonite for Superman right there in that round. Like, if you're just going to keep plotting, you know what's great for plotting? Explosive kicks that you can't see coming.
Yes, and he lands with a spinning back kick to the face as Gegard is going down, because as Ken said, he seemed like he scouted it high, takes it flush on the chin, and then follows that up with a perfectly placed flying knee, and the fight is over, which, of course... prior to today, left a lot of questions like, okay, so what do you do with a dude who is essentially getting owned in the way that we thought he was going to get owned? And then, you know, the fight is over.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you look at it from a timing perspective, Gegard Mousasi won 5 minutes and 5 seconds of a 5 minute and 25 second fight, right?
Mm-hmm. So ask Chael Sonnen about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so same sort of thing, right? What would you do if Anderson Silva was not Anderson Silva? You would have had the same questions in that fight of what you would do with Anderson Silva, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, he beat him with a triangle with 5 seconds left. That was really crazy. So we get our answer, which I think is...
Well, he gets to fight in a week.
Well, but I think a perfect fight for him, because it's not like they took, okay, you beat Gegard Mousasi, now you're a number one contender, which I think would have been a really terrible idea for him.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he gets Robert Whittaker, because Bisping has injured his elbow, and I love to plant conspiracy theories, so feel free to run with this one. But Bisping wants to fight Anderson. Anderson wants to fight Bisping. Bisping already had a dance card. Hey, my elbow's hurt. And
hey, I might have to wait until that. Wait, who? Anderson? What?
Anderson Silva?
I'm going to fight Spider-Man? What? My elbow.
So, but
until
my,
we can sign the contract.
Yes, until
my elbow.
My elbow will be fine.
Seems
to
fine on
to
UFC
write my,
on Fox. I'm just going to say that.
Write my name. So he's got an elbow injury, which takes him out of that fight and puts Uriah Hall against Robert Whittaker, which I think is the perfect thing for them to do, to give him another chance to win in a very decisive fashion. And then we can start talking about where he belongs in that division. Because prior to Saturday night, Ken, he was essentially unranked. He was not in the top 15.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard with a win like that in this business to be like, okay, you beat Gegard Mousasi, so you're number five. Because that would be really difficult for me to go, yeah, that's what that is.
In the middleweight, though?
Yes.
I mean,
difficult for me to say that he's number five.
Because I'm looking at five, maybe. But I can put him ahead of Lyoto Machida after that win. I mean, he beat Gegard Mousasi, right? I mean, Gegard fell down two stops, spots there. And Uriah's wasn't ranked, jumped to 10. I love the fight, though.
10 is perfect.
Here's the more important thing than rankings. And like you say, the Robert Whittaker fight's a good fight for him as far as still being able to win. And he's coming off a short camp. Or I don't even know if he's going to run a camp at this point.
Probably, right.
He gets to be on Ronda Rousey's card.
Yes.
That, you know, it, that that's the most interesting dynamic we've seen develop over the UFC over the past, you know, 24 to 36 months, is that you want to be on Ronda Rousey's card. That's bigger than being in the main event in some of these UFCs. And he's now on that card, so you come off a big win here, and then, okay, you know what?
Yep.
Here's your other bankable guy, Chris Weidman. Sure, I want to see this fight. It hasn't happened yet because Chris Weidman, he's fought Vitor Belfort. I mean, he's fought Lyoto Machida, right?
Yes, he has.
And I don't remember the fight.
Neither does Lyoto.
Neither does Lyoto.
So, I mean, you got other guys in there I want to see up there. Jacare and you like Yoel Romero. But, I mean, if you see a guy like Uriah Hall, oh, that was the guy that whipped this dude's ass on the Ronda Rousey card. Remember
yep.
that? Remember that? Yeah, I want to see that dude fight Chris Weidman. So he's set up very, very nice here. And yeah, there's not a lot of dudes that sit at 10 and go, well, with a win, I could go into a title shot. With a win, he could go into a title shot just because of the card that he's on and the people that will see the card.
Well, and I think to add to that, Ken, you beat Gegard Mousasi and you beat Whitaker. Now I think you add that to being on the Ronda Rousey card, then I think, yeah, you have a conversation that you are certainly in that upper echelon at this point to see what we can make of you. And I think this is the perfect placement for him, despite the short camp. In Josh Barnett's case, it becomes a very interesting discussion because prior to this fight, we had talked about how Josh is this guy who just sits in the heavyweight division at mm-hmm. 6 till he decides to do something. That he sits maybe at 5. I don't know where he is today. I'm not looking at it. Mm-hmm. I know you are. But like he sits there.
I can go grab that.
And, you know, he comes off of this thing and he says, look, I got a chance at a big movie role. I don't know when my next thing is. It might be 2 months from now. It might be 2 years from now. It might be never. And I think that's one of the things that makes him such a fan favorite is I don't know who else to compare him to other than a guy like Nick Diaz, where he's a game fighter. He always comes in. He's always ready to fight. Puts on a great performance. You know,
you think he could beat anybody even if he's not favored?
Sure. And I think the Roy Nelson fight just proves the same things that we always know, is that nobody's knocking out Roy Nelson. Like it rarely happens. So Josh not knocking him out, I don't think is a loss. Roy to me looked horrific.
That's what I'm wondering. Roy Nelson has become that dude that went from the everyman and, oh, I really want to relate to that guy, to the guy you're looking at and going, dude, this is what you do for a living. Give yourself a real shot. You know, and that's what a lot of guys are saying. He's got some of the best guys in the world to work with. He's one of those dudes in the division too. Even where he lands, I think he's, I don't know if he's top 10 anymore or not. He can't be that high. No, he's number 12 now. How many 12 fighters in the world are able to have a paycheck that would allow them a good living, that allows them to train all year? Let me tell you something. Hakran Diaz in the featherweight division can't live on his paycheck with the UFC.
No.
I can tell you that. Neil Magny's probably having a tough time. He's number 12 in the welterweight division. Bobby Green, I sort of might know that name, but it seems kind of generic, so maybe that's why I know the name. He's not living on number 12 in the lightweight division.
Right.
Roy Nelson is, and that's becoming disappointing. It went from, oh, look at this guy. He looks like us, and he bangs his belly in the cage, to a guy that some of us are looking at that probably look more like Roy Nelson than we want to, and going, dude, use your resources. Take your advantages. Go in there and give yourself a real chance to win. Give yourself some cardio. I mean, a little bit of cardio in that fight, a guy that can absorb that kind of damage, I don't know if he would have beat Josh Barnett, but man, give yourself a chance, bro. That's what a lot of us are saying at this point, and it's starting to become frustrating to see what Roy Nelson does with what is considered the opportunity, because there's a lot of dudes like us that look like Roy Nelson. There's a lot of dudes like us that would love the opportunity to be able to roll 6-7 days a week.
Sure.
To train 6-7 days a week. To be a fighter 6-7 days a week. And not have to worry about another job. And not have to worry. And the dude doesn't really have to worry about sponsorships. I mean, he's making his check. He's not making championship money, but he's doing all right. I just named 3 other guys 2 minutes ago. Can you name any of those dudes? No. No. There's one dude who's like, I can name all things. No, there's that guy. Nobody can name those dudes because they're not making enough money and they're not in the spotlight that Roy Nelson is. And it's just a little bit frustrating to kind of watch that kind of fight and wonder. I think Josh Barnett's an amazing fighter. But now I watch that fight and I'm like, oh, man, I wonder what would have happened. Like 20 pounds lighter, maybe a little more muscle, maybe a little more cardio. I don't know. because the dude didn't get knocked out. The dude is never really in danger, but he just can't get over that hump to win the fight. And maybe that's not where he would be, but damn, it doesn't seem like he's given himself the chance for a long, long time.
And you've got to look at a guy like that and think, how much longer do you want to keep a guy like that, even at number 12? Because I think most people, regardless of what camp you would lie in as far as knowing Bobby Green and Neil Magny and Hakran Diaz, right?
Very good.
You know, if you knew all three of those guys, good for you. And if you don't, it's no big deal. But I think you would undoubtedly, both of those guys who would and would not know those three, would rather see at this point Mark Hunt in every single one of those fights.
Oh, for sure.
Every single one of them.
Yeah. It's just one of those instances where you're looking at it and you're just kind of wondering what could have been. Because I think he's past it at this point, and we all kind of know that. And the Josh Barnett fight proved that. I mean, this was one of those fights where you got a lot of fights where both guys look like winners. You know, I honestly think both guys look like losers after this fight. I mean, Josh is a dude where you don't hold it against him too much, probably because he's not fighting all the time. And, oh, you can kind of chalk that up to ring rust and not worry too much about Josh Barnett.
Ring rust or, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I would say ring rust or you fight to the level of what you're doing. And that was like a sparring session with a guy who didn't want to fight.
And that Josh Barnett's one of those dudes. I mean, he's going to work to the level of the guy he's facing, and he's winning the fight handily.
Sure.
I mean, that's another thing, too. And we always talk, don't leave it to the judges. Don't listen to your corner sometimes because they'll blow smoke up your butt. But I mean, he was winning this fight. There's not a lot of incentive for him when he's got a movie coming up or he's got New Japan Pro Wrestling where he's going to make $1 million for three matches.
Right.
Not a lot.
Right.
There's not a lot of motivation for him to run across the ring and try to, like, take a punch from Roy Nelson when he doesn't have to. He's going to beat the crap. And he took his risks. Roy Nelson's just a tough-ass dude.
He's a very tough dude and obviously couldn't be put away, but I don't know what you do with him next because I'm with you. I don't know that I want to see him again. I was excited for this fight because I thought of what it could be. And then what it was just didn't live up to the hype.
Or wasn't.
Neither one of those guys looked particularly great. But I think Josh is still one of those guys that anytime he comes back, again, like Mark Hunt, people just like to see fighters who want to fight. And he fights, but he does fight.
How cool would Mark Hunt, Josh Barnett be? I think we've done that before. I'd have to go look.
Probably have done that before. I don't know off the top of my head, but I would be totally down for that. Other news this week, we alluded to, I think, 2 weeks ago, maybe even three, that Rich Franklin was talking about coming back for one more fight, and we were excited to see that. My guess,
obviously, the rumblings were kind of true that he was thinking about,
yes,
it because he decided.
My guess is he got into the ring and tried that out a little bit, and he announced his retirement this week, saying that his body just can't do what he wants it to do, so no go on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% surprised. Rich Franklin's always been one of the smartest dudes in the business, and he was never going to be a guy that was going to, for lack of a better comparison, become Wanderlei Silva and just keep fighting to fight.
And go crazy.
He was never going to be that dude. So you knew if he was going to come back. I mean, even his last couple years, I mean, he picked those fights. He picked those fights for some notoriety, to cash some checks. But, I mean, he did a lot of it for the fans, too. He wasn't in it just for the money. He just was very smart about picking his fight. If he's going to fight Kung Lee, okay, I'll fight that dude. He's 40. And he was in movies right. for the first 20 years of his career.
Yes, right.
I mean, he was smart about picking the fights, whether he would end up winning or losing them. He wasn't a dumb guy. I mean, I think he knew exactly where he wanted to be. He's the dude that would have, for years and years, held a championship in UFC if we would have had that 195 belt. He was a guy caught a little bit in between. He was a guy who was there during the prime of Anderson Silva. And let's remember, all the guys Anderson Silva's fought, he's come out in record many a times. He said Rich Franklin is the guy he respects the most. And a lot of people read into that, too, maybe the only guy that he's actually respected that he's fought. So I think that says a lot about Rich Franklin. Rich Franklin's one of the, what do we call it in the UFC Hall of Fame? Legend category?
Yes.
Innovator? I don't remember what it is at this point.
I think it is legend, actually.
Legend. So, I mean, he's that guy that lines right up with that legendary status. You know, he was there at the beginning, maybe didn't shine as bright as some of those other dudes, but he was there at a lot of important times for the UFC. And, you know, I wish him well on his retirement, and he's one of those true good guys in the business.
An awesome guy, so we wish him well with that. Speaking of retirement, it appears that BJ Penn has a bone to pick with Nick Lentz and is motivated to get back in the octagon to take on this grudge match. We will keep you posted as to whether or not that's going to happen. Again,
he said Nick Lentz or Conor McGregor, and you know what? Good for you, BJ Penn. Shut up. So don't start. No, you're going to.
Oh, handstand. You're totally. I'm all in. I'm laughing.
Wallet's on the table.
I'm at.
Wallet there. There, taking that BJ Penn Conor McGregor fight right now.
I am all in. I will give you $60 today for that. Also, Travis Brown has been, I don't know if exonerated is the right word, but he's back from his sabbatical.
Is he still banging Ronda Rousey?
Don't know that either, okay. Allegedly.
Do we not do that on this show?
We can do that if we know it. Yes, like TMZ. But he is back. He will fight Matt Mitrione on January 17th. So if you're a Travis Brown fan, you'll be excited to know that he is back in the
Octagon. Mitrionette.
Or a Mitrionette, which is like a marionette, but for Matt Mitrione.
Right. Matt pulls the strings.
Yes. Yes, he does. Very WWE of you, my friend. So they are back. And this weekend, like I said, UFC 192. We will cover everything on Twitter and Facebook. All you have to do is search WOW Show.
Over under on Jon Jones getting arrested this weekend.
Under. Not happening.
Are you sure? Because I just found out it's Thursday, so there's still like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Still under.
Okay.
Next weekend, I would totally change my answer. I think this weekend, we're in the clear for this weekend. But next weekend, all bets are off. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.